You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jason and Jamie. This is episode 329, and today I want to pick back up on the topic we left off with last week, which was answering the question, how does a couple after marriage get over the shame or embarrassment or feeling guilty or bad about sexual union in the context of marriage? And we looked at specifically, you know, the culture of the church that we grew up in the 90s, where sex was seen as a bad thing. And so it's a hard transition to go from that to a proper biblical understanding in the context of marriage. And we looked at Proverbs chapter 5 and how God's good design for sex is good, and it's delightful, and it's meant to be enjoyed in the context that God gave it. We talked a lot about how sexuality, as marriage in general, is a step towards that oneness that we will one day experience with Christ, and the beauty of God's good design, and defined or summarized, you know, God's purpose for sex in this term. God has given us sex as a means of showing his glory, delighting in worship, and fulfilling his design for procreation, intimacy, and physical pleasure under the covenant of marriage between a husband and a wife. And I do believe still that that's the best full definition of what that is and what that looks like. And so now this week we'll talk about the other side of that, is how to safeguard that marriage from idolatry, adultery and idolatry, both of those. Neither one are good, but specifically adultery, how to protect a marriage from adultery. And I think we got good biblical wisdom to help us do that as well. You know, God's good design for sex is only and exclusively in the context of marriage, right? So we recognize as believers in Jesus that adultery, homosexuality, pornography, fornication, lust, masturbation, all these things are outside God's good design, right? The kind of generic word for sexual immorality is porneia, which means everything that is not God's design. So literally, actively, everything that is not God's good design that we just discussed in the last episode, what is good and delightful and worshipful to the Lord, is immorality and is not good. And I think when talking about safeguarding marriage from adultery, I think we got to begin with, you know, the recognition that the battle for the preservation of marriage against adultery happens, you know, long before there's any actual sexual interaction or even opportunity for any actual sexual interaction. Because what we're invited to recognize is that the good wisdom of God begins at a mind and heart level. And you see that played out, you know, with these warnings that we are given. Look at Proverbs chapter 5 again, you know, so above, before the delight that starts in verse 15, we're given this encouragement to recognize that we safeguard against adultery at a much deeper level. It says in verse 1, "My son, give attention to my wisdom and incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion and your lips may reserve knowledge," or safeguard knowledge. "For the lips of an adulteress drip honey and are smoother than oil is her speech. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it." And so we're given one piece of really good encouragement here. Well, first of all, is that we obviously listen to the good wisdom of God, right? We incline our ears or open our ears to the good wisdom of God, you know, allow the truth of God to penetrate our heart and minds, you know, allow the good truth of God to go deep. And you see that same, you know, encouragement and warning in literally every chapter of the first nine chapters of Proverbs, right? It's listen to the good wisdom of God, incline your mind, incline your heart to the truth of God. And you see that in Proverbs chapter 6 as well. You see it in Proverbs chapter 7, right? 7 starts, my son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you. Chapter 6 starts with, my son, if you have become, it doesn't start that way. Chapter 6 doesn't, but chapter 5 does, chapter 7 does, chapter 4, chapter 3, 2, 1, you know. And so that's really where it begins, right? Is heeding and listening to the good wisdom of God, the good counsel of God, the good instruction of God. And in that is, you know, the implicit recognition that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, or there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is death, right? That's kind of the polar positions in the book of Proverbs. Is either we're going to be heeding the wisdom of the Lord or we're going to be heeding the wisdom of man. And the result of one is God's good, and the result of the other is death of everything it touches. And that is certainly true and played out. I mean, we see this played out in society all the time, that what we think is wise, what we think is good, what we think is valuable in this world, in this culture, is not wisdom at all. And in fact, it does not accomplish the good purposes of God at all. It does not accomplish anything that the Lord sets out for it to accomplish. And we see that very much played out in the truth of all these things. So all that said, we begin with that recognition that we heed the good counsel of God. And then he says in verse 3 here in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 2 here in Proverbs chapter 5, that you may observe discretion and your lips may reserve knowledge. And I think here, you know, the author is pointing to the recognition that not only does the good wisdom of God mean speaking the good knowledge of God, the good truth of God in an external sense, but I think there's an internal reality to this as well, that, you know, so often what our flesh thinks is good and right is not good and right. And if we are not actively speaking the truth of God into that space in our own heart and mind, then we end up wanting to, you know, act out that wisdom. I mean, think of how this like plays out in a sexual temptation sense, right? You have this idea. It's like, oh, if I have this temptation, then I got to fulfill it. Or sometimes it's even more genuine hearted than that, in the form of like, well, if I just give in to sin, if I just give in to sin in this one aspect or this one way or this one area, right? If I just give in to sin in this one sense, then it'll actually create less sin because I will have done the thing. It won't be on my mind anymore. I can confess and repent to the Lord, you know, the sin that I committed, and then I can be refocused on, you know, the good wisdom of God, the good purity of the Lord, and pursue that, right? It's just a, if I just get it out of my system kind of argument, as if just because we have a fleshly desire, we have to act on it. And I think a lot of this is literally our sin nature lying to us. And certainly culturally, we've given into this idea that if you have a desire, you have to fulfill it, right? I mean, how many times have we heard this very argument from people that, you know, if you have a desire, if you have a bent, you have to fulfill that. Right? You have to act that out. You have to live that out it's required for human flourishing or human happiness or human success. But the problem is the nature of the flesh, the sin nature, doesn't work that way. When we do give in to sin nature, when we do give in to that, then what ends up happening is just the desire grows, or the desire gets darker, the desire gets weirder, it gets more intense. And that's why you see, a culture that we live in has degraded and degraded and degraded and degraded, and it's all built around this principle or this belief that if you have a desire, you have to express it. You have to live that out. You have to express it in whatever way the flesh wants it expressed in. And the good wisdom of God steps into that and says, no. We need to be seeking the good wisdom of God and recognize, that we may feel this way. This may be our desire. This may be our attitude. This may be our orientation in our own mind, in our own fleshly thinking. But that is not the good wisdom of God. That is not the good purposes of God. And it ultimately doesn't satisfy. It leaves us empty. It's like we all have these desires that are not great. We all have the want to express God-given desire in ungodly and sinful ways. But to actually give into it never results in what the objective is that it claims to do. And I can tell you just in my own heart, my own life, I've never regretted the things that I have not done in terms of sinful thinking. When it comes to fleshly thinking, when I have given into those things, I've always regretted it. I've always felt the shame of it. I've always, at the end of it, asked the question, did that satisfy? Did it accomplish the very things that supposedly it purported to do? And of course, the answer is no. And so I think, first of all, the author of Proverbs, under the direct wisdom of the Lord, is encouraging us to recognize that it doesn't work, that thinking doesn't work, that we can't give in to those human thoughts. I mean, remember, Solomon is the author of this book, and Solomon's a man who had hundreds of wives, hundreds, literally. I mean, you want to talk about, not to be crass here, but fulfilling every fleshly man's desire to have, any woman they want. Well, Solomon really gave into that. I mean, he literally lived that out in his own life. And did he find happiness there? No. In fact, not only did he not find happiness there, but it actually ultimately led him into idolatry. He ended up worshiping all these other gods and walking away from Yahweh the Lord. And all of it was because he gave in this particular way. And that started, or that originated, with a thought that, if only I just give in to the flesh this one time, then I'll be happy. And here in Proverbs chapter 5, he's pointing out that no, the good wisdom of God pushes back on that and says, yes, I understand these are the thoughts that are in my head. I understand these are the desires that are in my head. And yet, I have to say, okay, am I going to fear the Lord, or am I going to give into fleshly thinking? And only one of those is going to lead to my satisfaction. And so when you have those moments, those spaces, those places where those thoughts come up, it's like, okay, Lord, please help me yield this to you. I understand that you are God. I'm not. That your way is good. Mine is not. And I just embrace it. As much as I feel like going and hooking up with any woman I want is a good godly desire, or will satisfy the good godly desire in me so that I can focus on the truth of God, it won't. It won't do it. And even more so from a marriage perspective. Not only are you risking sin against the Lord, but you're also sinning against your wife and potentially destroying a family. I mean, it's a profoundly deeper and more painful thing for everybody. recognizing that our sin doesn't just affect us, it absolutely affects, you know, everybody around us as well. And that's just the reality of sin, right? It damages everything and everyone that it touches. And so here in Proverbs 5, that's the encouragement begins there, right? To just say, don't allow any space in your thinking for, if only I just do this thing, then I'll be satisfied. And honestly, I think sometimes, you know, I know this isn't an easy thing to do, but honestly, I think sometimes that's something that needs to be confessed to a brother or sister in the Lord. If you're a woman, to a sister in the Lord. If you're a man, to a brother in the Lord. You know, just be like, hey man, I am wrestling with these thoughts. I understand they're sinful. I understand this is not good, God's good, but I need to just get it out there, bring it into the light, so that the power of sin in us, you know, dissipates to a great degree. You know, we're biblically called to do this. 1 John 1, we're called to walk in the light just as Jesus is in the light, right? And the result of that walking in the light is we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sin. And I've put it this way to people before, you know, one way or another, I'm going to end up confessing something. I'm either going to confess temptation, which temptation in and of itself is not sin. I can be tempted and not allow it or not give it space to become sinful in my heart or my mind. So I can confess temptation, or I can confess that I gave in to temptation, which is sin, and now I'm confessing the actual sin that I committed, instead of just being like, hey brother, can you pray for me because I'm having, you know, these thoughts or ideas or feelings that are not in line with God's good for me, and I don't want to have them because they're not in line with God's good for me. Can you pray for me? Can you hold me accountable? You know, can you help me walk through this and pursue the Lord? And something about that, you know, I think it's just maybe the way God designed us or something. Certainly he tells us to confess. And something about that really does release the power of sin to a good degree. And by bringing it into the light and confessing to a brother in the Lord, you have to then do something about it. You have to then take steps, make an action plan, and work to fight sin as well. So it has that added benefit in addition. And so recognize that the battle begins with those thoughts. You know, are we going to side with the truth of God, or are we going to side with sin? And then also, not just the thoughts, but when we jump over to Proverbs chapter 6, we're invited to recognize that this is a battle of the heart as well. He says in verse 20 of Proverbs chapter 6, he says, "My son, observe the commandments of your father and do not forsake the teaching of your mother. Bind them continually on your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you walk down, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. And when you wake up, they will talk to you. For the commandment is a lamp, and a teaching is light, and reproof for discipline are the ways of life. To keep you from the evil woman and from the smooth tongue of the adulteress, do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her capture you with her eyelids." So here again, we have that command, you know, to recognize the good wisdom, the good truth of God, and that it is something we must and have to keep before our mind, before our eyes all the time. But also reminds us that the very good word of God, the very encouragements of God, do in fact serve that very purpose, you know, guiding us, right? It brings to mind the Psalms 119, right, where we're encouraged with those same kind of words. In verse 105, right, it says, "Your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path," right? "I have sworn, I will confirm it. that I will keep your righteous ordinances, right? The good guidance of the Lord keeps us on God's good path. And you see, even related to purity itself, in go back to verse 9 of the same chapter, right? Psalms 119, verse 9. How can a young man keep his way pure? By keeping it according to your word. So again, how do we do it? Focusing on the good wisdom of God, the good truth of God. So you see that parallel there, or that encouragement there. But then you notice he focuses in specifically on the heart. He says, do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her capture you with her eyelids. And this is speaking to the reflection of the heart, or the focus of the heart, right? Because I think it's easy for us to say, kind of like with the thinking, oh, if we just, you know, do this thing, then we'll actually sin less, because we won't be obsessed with it, or won't have the desire anymore, or, you know, whatever. Well, the same thing kind of happens at the heart level as well. I think it's pretty easy for us to say, you know, I'm not doing these things, right? As a married man, it's like, oh, I'm not having an affair. I'm just thinking about it. You know, I'm just fantasizing about it. I'm just thinking about other women or engaging with other women. I'm just thinking about these fantasies or these desires that I have. I'm just thinking. It's just innocent, right? It's just internal fun. It's not something I'm going to act out on. And yet, the reality of that is when we allow space internally, and I get, you know, this is probably the biggest battle. These two encouragements of Proverbs, I think, are the most profound for us as believers, because we do have a tendency it's so much easier to not do a thing than to have a heart or mind attitude that's in line with that, right? It's so easy to just be like, oh yeah, it's just a simple little thing. It's just a harmless little thing. It's just this little thing that I'm thinking about in my mind, and it means nothing. I'm not going to actually act on it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to engage with anything. I'm just having a little fun. It's no big deal. Maybe everybody even does it, you know, whatever. And before you know it, you do actually move closer to doing something about it. You do actually do move and act in a way that moves you in line with that truth or that thing that you're thinking about. And remember the warning of Jesus in Matthew chapter 15, verse 19. He says, for out of the heart comes every evil thought, murder, adulteries, fornications, theft, false witness, slanders, right? Everything, lying, cheating, stealing, sexual sin, all of it, it's from the heart. And the Bible also encourages us or challenges us to guard our hearts, because from it is the wellspring of life. And I think the point of all that is to recognize, if I am mulling over sin, if I am fantasizing over sin, if I am allowing space in my heart for this to happen, then ultimately I will actually end up acting on it, because it ultimately comes from my heart, this drive to finally do it. And so it is an encouragement to recognize that the danger, literally the danger, happens all the way at the heart level, all the way back there. It's like what I think about, what I allow my heart to meditate on or to think about, that's ultimately going to be what leads to action eventually. And I mean, think about how many times do you hear people who have had an affair say, well, I never planned on this happening. I never planned to do this. I never planned for this to happen. And I think genuinely that's true, right? That nobody plans. I don't think anybody ever just goes out and says, you know, today would be a good day to cheat on my spouse, to cheat on my wife, to cheat on my husband, to have an affair. Today would be a great day to do that. It's never that, right? It began all the way back with, well, I have this desire that I've been thinking about, and maybe if I just act on it one time, it'll get out of my system and I can move forward. And at a heart level, I've been fantasizing about this sinful thing, this person, this relationship, this whatever. And eventually then it does drive me more and more to do it, right? And combine all of that, and you get the picture that we're given in Proverbs chapter 7, which is somebody who's very much not kept the wisdom of God, right? They've not kept the good command of the Lord. And as a result, end up in this place. You know, Proverbs chapter 6, it says, Proverbs chapter 7, verse 6, it says, for at the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice, and I saw among the naive, and discerned among the youth, a man lacking sense, passing through the streets near her corner, and he was taken away, takes the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness. And behold, the woman comes out to meet him, dressed as a harlot, cunning of heart. She is boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She is now in the streets, now in the squares, and lurks by every corner. So she seizes him and she kisses him, and with a brazen face she says to him, I was due to offer peace offering today, and I have paid my vow. Therefore, I have come out to meet you, to seek your presence earnestly, and I have found you. I have spread out my couch with coverings and colored linens from Egypt. I have sprinkled my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let's drink of our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves in caresses. For my husband is not home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken bags of money with him. At the full moon, he will come home. With her many persuasions, she entices him. With her flattering lips, she seduces him. Suddenly, he follows her as an ox goes to slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces his liver as a bird hastening to a snare, so he does not know that it will cost him his life. And so the picture here is the one who has not listened to good counsel, the one who has not taken the good wisdom of God, right? He's considered the idea. He's played around with it in his heart. And then ultimately ends up moving into a position where he can fall into trouble, because now he's going near, right? He's moving actively in the direction of sin. And then the result is the desire kicks in, the flesh kicks in, all of that kicks in. And before he knows it, he's given into sin. And the result of that sin is absolute destruction. And so I guess the encouragement here from all of this is to say, if you want to safeguard your marriage from adultery, then you do it at the heart and mind level. You do it long before you ever go near. You do it long before you've ever acted out. You do it long before there's been any physical anything. You do it at the level of the mind and the heart, recognizing the good wisdom of God and not allowing or not leaving any space for any consideration that is not in line with God's good. And admittedly, I think that's a much harder battle, because in that space, boy, it's hard. It's hard to fight those thoughts. It's hard to not allow space for those thoughts to just play out in your own heart and mind. It's hard to not give into that thinking of, well, it's just harmless. I'm never going to do it. I'm just thinking about it. I'm just enjoying a fantasy in my own mind, in my own heart, in my own life, internally, without recognizing that that will absolutely and ultimately destroy you and destroy your marriage. instead of doing what God says, which is keeping the good wisdom of God and then delighting in the marriage that God has given you and focusing on that to safeguard, right? To enjoy what is God's good for worship and God's glory and our best for human flourishing, and also to not allow any space or any place to consider sin at a mind level or at a heart level.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.